Welcome to Pieces of Choice, the podcast where we explore how conscious awareness can help us cultivate inner peace and transform our lives. I'm Natasha Wallace, and in each episode, we'll hear from guests about their personal journeys, their challenges, and how they found peace, and how they're helping to bring greater peace to the world. Today, we're going to start with something a little different, though. Sophie Milliken, a fellow female entrepreneur, is here to interview me about the idea behind the podcast. Sophie is the founder and CEO of Moja Group. Moja works with entrepreneurs and senior executives to amplify their personal profiles and become known authorities in their industries. A multi-award-winning businesswoman and proud mum, Sophie also enjoys raising awareness of the Northeast region. She is a supporter of Northern Power Women and co-founder of City Ladies Networking. And if that wasn't enough, she's also the chair of SmartWorks Newcastle, who support unemployed women with interview clothing and coaching across the Northeast. Welcome to the podcast, Sophie.
Thanks for having me, Natasha. It's great to put you in the hot seat and get to interview you all about this fantastic new podcast.
Yes, great. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, so seems as I'm in control with the questions, let's kick off with you telling us what is Peace is a Choice and why do we need it?
Well, I mean, it's basically a methodology that I've developed and I'm publishing a book on it this year called Peace is a Choice.
Amazing.
And it really stemmed from all of the work that I've done around consciousness. So about 6 years ago, I published a book called The Conscious Effect, which was all about how cultivating a sort of greater level of self-awareness and understanding of self enables us to be a better version of ourselves. And the reason that I ended up writing that book is because I'd worked in HR for my whole life. I, about 8 years ago, was an HR director who burnt out and had a bit of a sort of wake-up call / existential crisis where I asked myself how that burnout could have possibly happened, because I'd always been quite a robust and resilient person. I didn't think I'd burn out, but I did. And I came to realize that it was a lack of consciousness and it was a lack of awareness of both myself and my surroundings that had led to my burnout. It wasn't the hours I worked, although I did work long hours. It was not understanding what really led me to thriving. And that was simply down to the fact that I didn't really understand myself. And I had really no awareness of what led to thriving, because, of course, that's not something we ever get taught. So I developed the conscious leadership model. I then published a book about it. I've then spent the last 7 to 8 years bringing conscious leadership into organizations and working with leaders and leadership teams to help them to become more conscious and deeply aware. Deeply aware is really what your sort of focus is, either in terms of working with them on a one-to-one basis or working with them on a team basis. And that, of course, just leads to better outcomes, because when you understand yourself better, when you understand any sort of blockers, limitations that are getting in the way of you being your best self, you can clear those out and then you can, you know, be a better version of yourself. And to answer your question, why peace is a choice, having done that for 8 years, I now experience greater levels of calm, I would say, you know, and peace than I ever did. I can't say I ever achieved peace before I became more conscious. I was maybe calm sometimes, but actually through giving myself greater levels of choice about how I want to be and how I want to show up in the world, and that's come through operating with greater purpose, but understanding myself more, I now achieve greater peace. And of course, that's what I help my clients to achieve too. And I felt like more people needed to know about this. More people needed to know what the sort of operating model was for achieving that sort of level of peace, which is what led to this podcast. It's leading to the book, but it's also leading to a new type of work that I'm doing with leaders and teams that really help them to quite quickly focus in on what they need to do to be more calm, basically.
And this feels so topical because it's something that people are talking about a lot more. It's something that people are more aware of within themselves. So it feels like it's come at a really good time. And you talk about the core message of peace is a choice being no matter how heavy the burden, peace is always a choice within reach. Can you share a bit more about your story around how that shaped this philosophy?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, so I work with leaders to help them to optimize and sustain their performance. And the conscious leadership model that I developed and is, you know, scientifically validated. I worked with UCL on that. And we've got a psychometric to measure it. And it's the only measure of performance and well-being in leaders. And the reason that I developed that was because as a leader, I felt quite a lot of pressure a lot of the time. You know, it's a hard job, isn't it? Leadership. And a lot of the leaders around me were often talking to me about their struggles and their challenges, and not just for themselves, but, you know, how do I motivate a team? So it's sort of a heavy burden to carry. But, you know, life can be tough and challenging, and your mindset is everything in terms of getting through it. So the more I worked with leaders to sort of understand how to help them to be at their best, and the more that I did that work myself, I came to the conclusion that it really is the way that we think that shapes our understanding, our experience of the world, but also the way it makes us feel, the emotional journey that we go on. And I often talk about what would your wise self say? And I think that often we're not particularly good at channeling our wise self. We react in the moment based on our, you know, prior experience or our perceptions of what's going on. And often, you know, we're operating from a position of stress. So that can be catastrophizing it worse or, you know, being mildly anxious at best. And it doesn't have to be like that. We don't have to experience the world like that. So I now talk about, you know, what's the peaceful path? So how can you make choices and decisions about this? And what mindset do you need in order to get you through this in the best way? And it doesn't mean that you won't still experience difficulties. It doesn't mean that you won't still suffer sometimes. It doesn't mean that things won't be hard, but it does mean that the way you approach it just make it easier to get through.
I love that piece, the peace path. I like that as a concept. I feel like I could draw that out and have all sorts of things on it. What kind of advice do you give people around gaining greater levels of peace within their lives?
I mean, I think the first sort of operating principle is that you need to be conscious. You know, you need to really be aware and discerning about what's going on around you. Because, I mean, as humans, we tend to repeat the same thinking and patterns of behaviour today that we did yesterday, that we did the day before. You know, the majority of what's going on for us is very automatic. We don't tend to spend a huge amount of time in reflection or learning about our responses to things. So the first thing is to get conscious. So, you know, acting consciously and becoming more aware of ourselves and what's going on around us and our responses is really, really important. The second thing is, I call it radical love. So that's about showing yourself deep compassion. That we're very unforgiving, we're brutal towards ourselves sometimes, and it's really unhelpful. It holds us back, it makes us feel bad. We don't focus on what we are achieving and the progress we are making. We're often thinking about what we're not achieving and, you know, the mistakes we've made, or why did I say that? Why did I do that? Why haven't I done this yet? Why can't I be better? It's really unhelpful for staying at our best. So we need to show ourselves love. And I call it radical love because it's showing love where love might not come automatically or might not be your obvious choice. But it's also about making sure that you're doing the same for the people around you. So showing some level of compassion and forgiveness to others rather than jumping on what other people have done that's not right, or, you know, feeling like you need to sort of persecute or judge.
Yeah. Do you think some of this is being British? Because some of this advice makes me go, oh, no, I'm not used to doing that. And it feels a bit different to kind of what we've been taught at school or, you know, when we started out in our careers. So it feels quite different.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, maybe there's something about being British, but I mean, I work with leaders across the globe.
And are you seeing the same trends?
Oh, gosh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I work, you know, India, the Americas, across Europe and the UK. I mean, this is relevant to everybody. We're all human. We all experience the same human things. Now, there might be other cultures who are more expressive or who are more open or who are maybe willing to be a little bit more authentic. The human condition means that we're on pattern repeat most of the time. the human condition means that we can be really tough on ourselves and on others. And it also means that we are prone to either losing hope or worry or anxiety. I mean, that's just human. That's the human condition, for sure.
Mm. And peace perhaps isn't a word that you would normally associate with leadership and business. So why should peace be at the forefront of leadership?
I just don't think peace should be elusive. And I think that the reason we don't talk about it is because we think it is. I mean, I'm sure that's not conscious. We're not all thinking, oh, because peace is elusive, I'm not going to use it at work. I think that there's been some things that have been normalised in the workplace, which we need to really, really consider, which is, you know, people are operating on a sort of low level of anxiety and stress all of the time. Well, you know, why is that? That's not good. It's certainly not good for productivity or performance, certainly not good for driving the outcomes that the organisation want to achieve. We need to really manage the nervous system of our organisations, and we're not. We don't really pay a huge amount of attention to it. And actually, as leaders, our job is to make sure that people aren't in flight mode, and often they are. They're worried about just keeping their job, just keeping their head down, just keeping food on the table. And, you know, it's up to leaders to really be aware of the fact that when your team is feeling anxious, they are simply not able to deliver the performance that you need from them. So you have to think about that. And so whether you call it peace, whether you call it calm, whether you call it low anxiety, whether you call it good well-being, this is something that's really, really vital to human performance. So we have to pay attention to it. But I think the other thing is, we don't use the words peace and love in organisations, but, you know, why not? Why not? You know, we're sentient beings. We feel emotions. Our whole experience of life is emotional. It's based on feelings. So if we aren't managing that, if we're not aware of that, if we're not operating together in order to serve each other and serve the greater good, then actually peace just becomes massively elusive. And I did speak to one of my clients about this a few weeks ago. I said that I was publishing this new book called Peace is a Choice. And he said, oh, I don't feel comfortable with that at all. Like, oh, no, I don't want you to use the word peace. That makes me feel really uncomfortable. And I thought, good. Absolutely. Like, I want people to have an emotional reaction to this.
Yeah.
Because if they're having an emotional reaction to it, then they're actually thinking about it. And we need people to act and to think differently. And so why not use a word that might be slightly provocative?
That would be a great introduction to the book, actually, wouldn't it? I think that sums it up really well. And I think some of the language that you're using around it is making me think, because I'm having lots of conversations with business owners at the moment who are quite rightly worried about the economy and the, you know, a lot of the challenges that business owners are under around costs and things at the moment. So I totally get it from both sides around that panic mode and worrying about things. But equally, as you say, if you just go down that road, then you're wasting so much energy, and actually this peace is what you need to steady the ship and deliver results that then hopefully will bypass any challenges that we're having with anything else.
Exactly, exactly. And it was interesting, actually. I was speaking to my mentor at Christmas, and I'd sent him my business plan for 2025, and we got on a call. So this is an amazingly conscious leader. I mean, he was one of my first clients when I started doing conscious leadership about 7 years ago. I hit him and his team, and he is an MD of a global business that's grown very, very fast in recent years, but an incredibly conscious leader and a very, very calm person. Hence, I asked him to be my mentor. So I sent him my business plan at Christmas, and it talked all about executive coaching and, you know, the leadership programs that I run around conscious leadership, et cetera, et cetera. And it talked about peace as a choice, but it was a small part of the business plan. And we got on the call, and he said to me, I read your business plan. I think it was about 7 pages long. And he was like, yeah, I was like, you know, I don't know why you sound different to any other coach, to be honest. I wouldn't buy you. You know, if you emailed me along with another 5 coaches, I wouldn't read your email.
Wow.
And you know, well, this is what you want your mentor to be,
yep,
isn't it? Because you want
the challenge,
them to challenge
absolutely.
You. I mean, he's a caring, good guy. So I'm just like, yeah, I'm happy to hear that. Well, because at the same time, he also said, and then I read what you wrote about peace is a choice and calm leadership. And he said, that is new. That is different. And he said, we have done every model, every psychometric. You know, we're doing strengths-based development at the moment because that's what's being rolled out across the organisation. And he said, peace, that's different. You know, talking about calm leadership and how you can show up in a calm way and feel calm is actually, if you could come in and speak to my leadership team and help them to feel a little bit more calm, I would get you in straight away. He said, because, you know, we hit the end of 2024 all feeling pretty burnt out. We had a short break at Christmas. We came back. We all feel the same as we did. And I can't take the work away from them. I can't change the time zones that we're operating in to make their day less long. You know, I can't make many things better. It's going to be just as busy and just as demanding and just as pressurized this year. However, if you were able to help them approach all of that with a certain mindset that kept them steady, that would be a game changer for me. So it really did bring it to life for me that this could really help to make a difference. And of course, you know, the reason for the podcast is because there's lots of other people working in this space. You know, there's an army of us really trying to steady the ship and trying to help people to be at their best and manage their anxiety and deal with their imposter syndrome. I mean, anything that gets in the way of you being at your absolute best on a day-to-day basis. So I think we need to raise awareness of this and broaden the conversation out so people have more access to helping themselves.
Yeah, 100%. And you were talking there around sort of burnout and stress, and there are studies that show that burnout and stress are costing businesses around £51 billion annually, which is staggering. Why do you think that most organisations are still slow to invest in mental well-being?
Well, I think it's because this is a very complex topic and it's hard to know what actually moves the dial. So I think that raising awareness of mental ill health is one thing, and putting things in place like mental health first aiders is really important to deal with the crises end of well-being. So, you know, things have gone woefully wrong or I'm really struggling, and actually there always has to be an intervention in place for those scenarios. But actually, you know, that 51 billion probably isn't all about crisis. It's about the day-to-day experiences that people have where they just feel a bit rubbish and they don't go to work, or they've felt a bit rubbish for quite a long time and so they're burning out. So it's about the preventative methods or measures that you put in place to support well-being. And of course, in order to do that, you have to understand people. I mean, this is about psychology, but it's also about creating systems in which people can thrive. And you really need to understand what that looks like. You know, how do you put the right structures in place in your organizations? How do you make sure that the relationships between line managers and their people are optimized? How do you make sure that people are having the right conversations? How do you make sure that you are creating a culture where people feel psychologically safe? How do you make sure that people have got meaningful jobs where they feel valued, where they absolutely know what their mandate is and they know what they need to deliver and they know how that serves the greater good? I mean, it's complex. You know, there's so many aspects that actually contribute to well-being in the workplace. And I just don't think that we have time to figure it all out. And therefore, we do things like, you know, raising awareness of mental health on an awareness day, but it doesn't move the dial. Of course, it doesn't move the dial. So I think organisations need to be equipped with the understanding of what really does lead to teams and organisations thriving, and conscious leadership, the model that I developed, is with that in mind. And then, you know, the peaceful path or the peace is a choice methodology is about the mindset that people need to show up in. We need to be empowering people with this knowledge of self to also take care of their own well-being. But it's complex. And I think unless organisations realise that they need to create the space to get better at this stuff, to allow people to reflect, to have time to explore these topics together, then actually they won't move the dial on well-being. And they'll keep on saying, oh, you know, any money that we've invested hasn't worked. It hasn't actually created the return on investment that we expect, because it's not providing that return on investment.
Do you think that there's a difference between how smaller businesses can be approaching this as opposed to larger organisations? Because I guess with larger organisations, you expect them to have a budget and a bit of a plan around this. So, you know, thinking about my own business, where there's, you know, five or six of us, how would we go about implementing some of these things?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the starting point is to be really, really clear about your purpose. I mean, I'm going back to conscious leadership a little bit here. So one of the five aspects of conscious leadership is about leading with purpose, being absolutely clear about the difference it is you're trying to make. And it doesn't have to be some sort of grandiose purpose. It doesn't have to be, you know, about changing the world. I mean, often that's a nice purpose to have, but it does need to be about what difference we are intending to make in the world. Why are we here? And I think then everybody needs to understand that. Everybody needs to align around that. And then, of course, you need values that align around that. So how are we going to behave here? How do we want to treat each other? How do we deal with situations where we're under pressure? How do we operate together? And another aspect of conscious leadership is about togetherness. How do we create an environment where we can all bring our best and be our best? And having conversations about that and making sure that you've sort of got a charter or a playbook or something in place so you know what you're all aligning around as a team. And then I think you need to have ongoing conversations about, like, how are you feeling? How are you doing? Do you have what you need? You know, what's going to bring out the best for you? Operating to strengths. So I think leaders need to be absolutely clear about what the strengths of their team are. And they're trying to shape roles around those strengths so that people can do their best work. Because we know, I mean, neuroscience now shows us that when we are playing to our strengths, we tend to be moving with greater passion and energy. And the neural pathways that are developed around our strengths are always stronger than any neural pathway that would ever be developed around a weakness. So you're trying to respond to the passions and the pleasures, I guess, of the team that you have in place. And then, I mean, there was a Google study that was done around what leads to high performance in teams. And it was a very, very extensive study. It was called Project Aristotle, where they looked at 180 of their highest performing teams. And a couple of the things that they found led to high performance. And it wasn't IQ, and it wasn't sector experience. It wasn't time in post or time served. It was what they called conversational turn-taking. So everybody has a voice, basically. And it was also social sensitivity. So everybody notices each other, because when people feel seen and when people feel heard, you create an amazing culture. So, I mean, without paying any money for consultants or coaches or anybody to come into your business to try and help you to solve this, if you just lead consciously and understand that all of those things are important, and then also take shared responsibility for building a resilient mindset, which is about taking care of yourself and making that absolutely normal and fine to look after yourself, and recognizing that mindset is everything. It's absolutely everything. There's a new study that's come out to show that around 95% of individual performance is based on mindset alone. It's not to do with your experience. It's about your mindset. Sort of anything is possible if you have the right mindset. So you need to cultivate that. So you need to recruit for that, and you need to make it absolutely abundantly clear to everybody the sort of mindset that's going to drive performance in your business. And that'll be unique to you. But this is all about human behavior and mindset, really.
It's so interesting. I'm definitely going to look up some of these research reports that you've referenced there, because I think it's such an interesting topic, and it's something that I need to think about as a leader, and how can I create those sorts of environments within the team. So helpful stuff. What's one misconception about leadership and mental strength that you'd like to challenge?
Well, that leaders are strong. I mean, actually, that's probably a bit bold.
But we're going bold. Pieces of choice is bold, isn't it?
So, you know, leadership, is it about strength? I mean, to some extent it is, because you're trying to cultivate mental strength. But I mean, I did some work with the military last year, and this was a massive eye-opener for me. Because I thought I was going into an environment, and I worked with some of the most impressive people in the military, like A grade. And what I discovered was their resilience wasn't high. Because of our conscious leader psychometric, we test for resilience in leaders, and their resilience wasn't high. And it was a massive eye-opener for me, because I just expected that all of those leaders that I was working with, if there was one thing they had in common, it would be strength and resilience. And the one thing they had in common was the fact that they didn't have high resilience. So actually, you know, we can get very bruised and very affected by our working lives, you know, and our home lives, if we don't take care of ourselves, if we don't pay attention to ourselves, if we don't understand who we are. And actually, unless you do that work, unless you do understand yourself, you can have heaps of physical strength and you can have the ability to push on through regardless. And I think, you know, as entrepreneurs, you and I would both know that there's many, many times that you just need to push on through. But most of the time, people can't see how you're feeling. They can't see how you're feeling when you're pushing on through. And, you know, imposter syndrome is prevalent in leaders. I mean, I see this all the time, to the point where actually, often, if I'm running a conscious leadership program, imposter syndrome is one of the first topics we cover. And I don't just throw it in there because I think that I should. I do a diagnostic at the start of the project to identify what is going on in the leadership team. And more often than not, there's lots of imposter syndrome flying around in that team.
It surprises me how much people are still talking about it and how widespread it is, because I know that when the term was first introduced, it was a label that was thought just to be associated with women. Mm. And we now know that that's definitely not the case. And I'm in, or have been in, various masterminds and groups and things. And it's the topic that men and women, everyone, is talking about at the moment. So, yeah, I can see why that would be relevant so early on.
Well, exactly. And I mean, there's a strong link between high performance and imposter syndrome. So, you know, let's shatter the myth that imposter syndrome is about being weak or ineffective or not good enough, and the belief that it really is you just waiting to be found out because you're not good. It's actually the opposite of that. A lot of people suffer with imposter syndrome because they're good. And actually, the more senior they become in the organisation, and the heavier the burden and the more responsibility, the imposter syndrome gets worse, of course, because, you know, there's a...
Because we've got high standards. We want to do a good job.
Exactly. And there's further to fall, of course, if it all goes wrong. And there's a lot of people depending on you. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very, very important topic that I think we need to deal with. And, you know, it is through actually consciously digging into topics like that with leaders and leadership teams that, of course, you unravel some of the limited or crooked thinking that's informing their mindset, so that you allow them to breathe a sigh of relief, because actually they're not imposters, as it turns out. And then, of course, as you can therefore see, you're on the path to a more peaceful life, you know, because you're getting rid of some of the demons that chastise you every day.
Fascinating. Talk about imposter syndrome for hours. There's just so much around with that, and it's something that we can all relate to. What is the legacy that you want to leave with Pieces of Choice?
Well, so, I mean, I've set the heady vision of helping 100 million people globally.
Wow.
I know. And I mean, so I meditate, and that came to me in a meditation. And I can remember coming out of the meditation and having like a proper argument with myself, which was 100 million people, are you having a laugh? Like, you know, don't let your ego get out of whack there, Natasha. And my inner voice was like, absolutely 100 million. You know, why not 100 million? There's billions of people in the world. 100 million actually is just scratching the surface. And we have to be bold. You know, we have to get out there and believe that we can make a difference. I mean, that's the only thing that really gets me out of bed in the morning, is to know that I can actually make a positive difference in this world.
And that is a bold vision, but it is achievable as
well.
Why not? You know, you've just broken it down there, and, you know, you've got to go for something that's big. Otherwise, what's the point? And you've got the podcast now, you've got a new book coming out, and all of the other work that you're doing, it all works together. So, you know, there are various touch points where you can influence a lot of people. So this is doable.
Yeah, and it's my life's work. So I'm 46. I've got some time. Hopefully I've got a bit of fuel left in the tank. You know, I will be doing this until my final breath, because it's really, really important to me. And I just don't, I mean, something I feel very passionately about is I don't think we need to suffer. We seem to have come to believe that we do, and we can't reach that level of peace on our own. We've got to do it together. We've got to support each other. One of the chapters in the book is called Believe in Humanity. You know, we have to work together. We have to support each other. We have to be there for each other. We have to radically love. You know, we need to show each other compassion and try and avoid all of that sort of negative narrative that goes with being alive and try to avoid the judgments, try to avoid the resistance, try to avoid falling into the darkness. I mean, one of the other chapters in the book is called Be the Light. And there's a lot going on in the world at the moment that could really help you to lose hope and lose faith and give up. Just keep your head down and think, as long as I can just get through, as long as I can just survive, I'll be okay. And it doesn't have to be like that. It does not have to be like that. There's enough good people, there's enough goodwill, there's enough good in the world that we can overcome any of the bad, any of the darkness, any of the difficulties, any of the challenge. We have to work together to do that. We have to keep the faith.
Completely agree. Well, you've certainly given me lots to think about during this conversation and a few things to go and read and look up and reflect on. I'm really excited for the rest of this podcast series. Can you give us a sneak peek into some of the topics or the guests that we might get to hear from?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I've gone with my friends first. So I'm going to be speaking to Matt Phelan, who's one of the founders of the Happiness Index. It's much, much more than an engagement survey business now, because they're making real strides. But Matt's belief is that we should be happy, we can be happy, and they're trying their damnedest to help organisations to create happy workplaces. I also am speaking to Jackie Lloyd, who is a big advocate for LGBTQ, and she talks about how we can sort of move the dial in terms of DE&I and, you know, much more besides. So I'm speaking to people who I have a huge amount of admiration and respect for, who are really trying to make a positive difference in the world. And I think the more we can get anybody who is doing that sort of good in the world on a stage and help them to be heard, and help them to sort of decode what they're doing so that we can all learn from that and then sort of configure our lives and our organisations around it. I think, you know, let's do that. Let's get that happening.
Sounds brilliant and definitely fits in with the mission that you have been describing. Natasha, where can people go to find out more about you and Peace is a Choice?
Well, so they can look at natashawallace.com, which is my coaching and consulting business. They can also look at the Conscious Leadership Company, so tclc.co, which is my conscious leadership development business. And obviously I'm on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure that those links are in the show notes. And finally, what should people do so that they don't miss out on any future podcast episodes?
Well, I think they should probably subscribe to the podcast and make sure it's in their favourites so they can keep up with what's going on. And I'm really hoping to grow the podcast so that we get to as many people who are doing this great work as possible. And I think there's huge amounts of learning to be done from the podcast, even in terms of being a leader of people and in terms of sort of wanting to do personal development work that, you know, could eventually end up transforming your life. So I think it's all very, very significant and important content.
That all sounds brilliant. And I think when people are subscribing and once they're an episode or two in, I'm sure you would love it if they would rate and review the show also. And now that they're going to have access to your details, if they've got any future guest suggestions, I'm sure you're open to hearing those too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Would love to hear any suggestions.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Peace is a Choice. For any information on what we've covered in today's episode and to connect with my guests, head to the show notes. It would be great if you could rate and review the podcast and subscribe now so you don't miss out on any future episodes.